Ryan grabbed her, and with a guttural cry, he climbed on top and inside. The sensation was maddening, and Ryan bit his own tongue to stop the sweet perfume from claiming him. Pain was the answer. Only pain stopped the siren call of the plant's perfume. Then his memory flared, recalling Christie's special muscles and how she used them as no norm woman could to pleasure a man. Ecstasy worth dying for. Pleasure beyond understanding. Die inside her, yes. Yes, that was worth any price. Ryan rammed all the way inside her to bring him as close as possible to her, then slapped the barrel of the Sig Sauer across the base of her skull. Christie gave a gasp and slumped over unconscious. A fresh wave of perfume flooded the arena as the flower spread wide its glorious petals. It was fighting for its next meal. Raw fury boiled inside Ryan at the concept, and he focused his rage in order to survive.
Goddamn son of a bitch! Die!
He fired his blaster at the plant. Holes were punched in the lush petals, and vines snapped, greenish sap oozing from the small openings. Standing on shaky legs, the mostly nude man grabbed his gun belt and reloaded, his whole world reduced to the ammo clip and the gun. Grabbing Christie by the hair, knowing that to pull on the living tendrils was agony to her, Ryan dragged the woman along behind him across the feasting bower, sheer willpower placing one foot ahead of the other. Whenever his will seemed to lag, Ryan fired the blaster close to his face, the sting of the muzzle flash shocking him back to reality for a few precious moments. Once past the doors, the perfume seemed to thin, but the desire still raged within the man. The steps wavered under his sight, but he plowed ahead, unstoppable in his determination to live. Sweat pouring off his body, Ryan staggered through the hallway of flowers, raging at the world, screaming curse words, doing anything he could think of to keep his anger fully fueled. Another yard was crossed, and still another. Suddenly, reaching outside, Ryan stumbled to the concrete and kept moving forward on his knees, dragging Christie behind, firing his blaster. A cool breeze blew over him, every breath taking away the rutting madness from his mind and body. Overcome, he slumped to the sidewalk and lost consciousness. Minutes later, greenies rose from the weeds and the rubble and started dragging the exhausted man and woman back inside the temple of their living god. Storm clouds filled the atmosphere above the planet Earth, and sheet lightning flashed constantly while hurricanes and tidal waves savaged the continents. And sterile deserts slowly spread across the world like a plague of dry rot. The burned-out hulks of numerous satellites circled the tortured planet, some bristling with antennae, others smooth, armored spheres of unknown purpose or design. Stationary, above the former state of Tennessee, floated a great black satellite, a slim, ferruled cylinder with enormous, shiny wings outstretched. Raw sunlight fell upon the millions of tiny glass squares composing the wings, and smooth pulses of electricity fed down the central supports and into the cylinder. There, computers hummed as accumulators stored the power. Then, from the bottom of the cylinder, a concave dish extended into view and began beaming invisible rays at the ruined world below. The beams spread outward in a cone formation as they bathed the polluted air, making the storm clouds dissipate until there was only a clear azure sky. The rays descended until reaching an area in the desert where strands of bare wire had been strung in yard-wide squares across miles of dead land. The cone washed over the wire, and now tiny waves of electricity flowed into a series of transformers that unleashed the harnessed power in a network of high-tension lines toward a crumbling city on the horizon. The ruins seemed to stretch for miles, tilting skyscrapers threatening to topple over, fires burning in gutted houses, rats feasting on bloated corpses strewed along the streets. Blast craters dotted the ground, their fused glass bottoms glowing with deadly rads. A layer of frost covered the city like a death shroud, and what few bridges remained were eaten by blisters of red rust, just barely hanging over polluted rivers full of dead fish and decomposing ship holes. As the cables reached the decimated metropolis, slowly lights flicked to life inside the buildings, and the picture began to change. Window cracks sealed, and roofs straightened into proper alignment. The frost melted away, and the weeds withered and died. The hordes of rats ran shrieking into the sewers as the graffiti flowed off the sides of the strong buildings, and grass began to grow in yards, and trees began to blossom. The roads smoothed as the potholes were filled, painted lines racing into existence along the clean macadam. The bridges became level, the rust falling away like autumn leaves, exposing the shiny steel underneath. A car rolled around a corner, then another, and another, until traffic flowed through the bustling city streets as in the days before the nuke storm. But the restoration didn't stop there. A tumble-down shack rose again as a brick school, the field full of graves transformed into a ballpark and a playground. The junkyards and bomb craters became fields of golden wheat that reached into the distance. Factories disgorged machinery and clothing into softly humming electric trucks. Machines rolled out of warehouses and thrust electric prods into the rivers. Soon the water boiled and began to run clear again, all the way to the blue ocean. The prods were withdrawn, and fish jumped from the waters, rejoicing in their newborn life. Outside the city, hordes of slavering muties touched the electrified fencing and withered into ash. Stalking the perimeter was a black dog with writhing tentacles sprouting from its shoulders, accompanied by a puma-like beast with a scorpion tail and insect mandibles. The beasts moved like well-oiled machines, but they too bumped the fence and vanished like flash paper in a candle's flame. First one, then a dozen people appeared on the sidewalks, smiling and not carrying blasters. Soon they became 100, 1,000. Far away, farmers rose from the wastelands, the electric fences repelling the muties, as tractors plowed the land, planting more crops. Then the skies gently rumbled, and a soft, clear rain fell on the world. Children rushed outside to play in the falling water, as forests turned green, and the world began to gradually turn into a blue-white sphere from the view in space. Then the television screen turned blue. Major Sheffield sat back in the chair, reeling from the amazing deluge of bizarre sights and sounds.
And that is our weapon?
Yes and no.
Silas turned off the television and VCR.
Unlimited electricity is merely one aspect of the kite. The device is actually simplicity itself, as you saw. Solar cells in a high Earth orbit turn direct sunlight into electricity, which is gathered in transformers and broadcast to Earth as low-frequency microwaves.
Like the microwave oven you showed me?
Different frequency, but the same principle. However, these beams cannot harm a fly, and are easily harnessed by those squares of wiring, which can be placed above croplands or cattle-grazing fields, doing no harm to the cattle or crops, I might add. And then you have electricity. Free, clean power. Gigawatts upon gigawatts.
Silas hobbled over to the television and got the tape out of the VCR. He slid the cassette into a box and stored it in a drawer along with his other videotapes.
A single kite was designed to supply enough energy to run pre-dark New York City and most of its suburbs. However, nowadays that's enough for all of the North American continent.
Chaotic thoughts swirled in Sheffield's mind.
Incredible! And this machine exists?
You have already seen it used against the slaves.
Silas reclaimed his hardwood chair. His bad leg was stiffening, and it was becoming difficult to rise from soft chairs without assistance. A simply intolerable condition.
Unfortunately, its military applications were also its doom. There's absolutely no way to stop such a microwave satellite from being converted into a deadly weapon of war. Simply change the focus, and you have a microwave beamer capable of... Well, you know what it can do.
The grotesque vista of what had been found after opening the doors to the bunker that night was a sight the officer would never forget.
And you created this, sir?
Good Lord, no. It was invented by a fellow American, Paul Glaser of Boston, back in 1970. But the United States would never allow the power stations to be built. partially because of business and politics, but mostly because whoever got one in space first could stop everybody else from building the second power station. Thus, only one was ever built, and that was done secretly.